Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky, proud partner and supporter of the Republic of Ireland women's national football team.
You're welcome back. We're going to start with the game at Anfield yesterday. Very happy to say former Liverpool captain Phil Thompson with us. Hi, Phil.
Joe, how are you? You all right?
Very well. That was some game yesterday, certainly second half.
Well, you know what? I thought it was wonderful anyway. It's a spectacle. I always love the way Manchester City play anyway, and it makes you extremely nervous being the opposition. As good as Liverpool are, you just revel in it. And even the start of the game, Liverpool high-pressed, 10 minutes. You looked at City, the ball was going out of play, regular, top players were making mistakes. But it's just how good City are. They don't panic. They keep passing the ball, and all of a sudden they get themselves into the game. And right up until half-time, I was, wow, this is a very special team. I thought City's performance at Chelsea was just extraordinary the week before.
Yeah.
I thought it was the best performance of the season so far. But yesterday, the first half, the way they wrestle the game away from us was just incredible.
Did you say you were at the game, Phil, yeah?
No, I wasn't. I was actually in Portugal.
Oh, listen.
I'm back now, but I was watching it with great enthusiasm.
You're living the high life. So listen, because on the TV, a graphic did pop up after about 10, 15 minutes, which on Sky showed the average first half positions. And like you were saying, really, it was Liverpool really high up the pitch, and it was City pretty much camped in their own half for that first 10, 15 minutes. How did they manage to wrestle control of the game so much in that first half, City?
And I do. You were looking at players who were making mistakes. Kevin De Bruyne, even Phil Foden. And Phil Foden ended up man of the match, and rightly so. But it's the confidence that Pep has in them. You can see him there, and he gets so irate with his players when they don't get possession of the ball. Not just keeping possession for the sake of it, which is what a lot of teams do. When they do, they pass it, they go back to the keeper, then it goes to the centre-back, and then it goes forward. And one of the wide players will come into the centre midfield. All of a sudden, they're getting positions in between the lines. And it's nothing fortunate about it. It's good coaching. And Pep does this time and time again. I remember seeing something. It was a clip, 10 or 15 minutes of him in Munich. And he was coaching the players. And he was saying, this will happen time and time again. Now, do it again. Do it. And I thought, this is a genius in action. And it's like that. Klopp is the same. As you say, he couldn't wait to get them in at half-time. Mm. Probably saying, look, this game at 0-0, we've done well here. We can only get better.
You know the way you're describing how Pep sets them up. Was there anything like that in your day?
Listen, back in my day, we were so confident. We didn't bother about anybody else. But the likes of Pep and Jürgen, even with Wenger and Ferguson, they did have a look at the opposition. They did see how they set up. But these guys now, they look at every little thing. When we played, we didn't bother. Mm. It was just concern ourselves. If we play well, we're better than the opposition. And I just think it's extraordinary. Some of the football that we watch now in the Premier League, I just think has been all this passing out from the back. We did that back in our day. We were doing the same thing, but not risking it because the ball can actually be played in the 18-yard box, which takes sort of great strength of character to be able to do that. And Pep asks his players to get on the ball all the time.
It was at the same time, in that first half in particular, when City were so dominant, Phil, it was hard to escape the feeling that if they had managed to buy Harry Kane, this league would be done.
I tend to totally agree, and Pep can sort of flag it up and say what he wants about this not having a number nine. He would like a number nine, particularly somebody like Harry Kane. And I think they would have scored a lot more goals. They are fortunate that they have such a good defence. And if they score just one or two, they'll win games. But I think at that stage, it could come back to haunt them. Because in Jordan, that first half, when they were very much on top, you thought, wow, they had somebody in the box who'd be sniffing out goals. I think he would have been great. So I just think it's it is a problem that he's going to have to live with, I think, for at least another year. But it could come back to haunt them, not having it, and you have a game, and they've had it this season, where you just can't score a goal.
Unless, of course, they go back again in January for Kane, and Kane kicks up more of a stink, because, I mean, he doesn't look happy, clearly. Maybe they will go back in January, not least with Champions League in mind as well.
Yeah, they could go in, but I don't think it's going to happen now, and certainly not in January. Not unless Spurs have got, and they've got that money well spent, but you don't have any guarantees with that, no matter how much you spend. Mm. I don't see it happening until next summer, even if that does happen then. But City will be looking. They'll be looking for other players that are a great team anyway. And I thought the way Liverpool played in the second half, I thought it was testimony to the strength of character of our lads to come back, which was quite sensational. The two goals were... What Mo Salah did was genius, pure genius.
Yeah, it was just, it's frightening.
Now it was, I just think Liverpool have got to take a lot of credit for what they did. But I just think it was to the both sides, and yeah, both managers afterwards, they love the football and how they play, how they compete with each other. Yes, we're becoming a big challenge to each other, but we play the game in the right way, and long may that continue.
On Salah, and like you said, look, the goal was just outrageous, and I suspect everybody watching gave out an involuntary roar when he scored, if you were a neutral, I suppose, because it was just such genius, as you say. He is coming into next year, the last year of his contract. It seems like negotiations are underway. They've signed up a couple of big names on long-term contracts. The highest paid player at the club is Virgil van Dijk on £220,000 sterling a week, was reading yesterday.
Wow. You've got a good in, Joe, you know all that.
Well, this is the word. I'll trust the journalist in this one. And Salah's looking for £300,000 a week. Now, obviously, look, it's outrageous money. It's ridiculous, but... It's not even market rate, really, in comparison to what he could get elsewhere. I presume Liverpool, as much as they will hate handing over £300,000 a week, will have to go pretty close to do that to keep him.
I would think so. And he is that valuable. As you see, he's being rated now as the best, possibly, in the world. Yes, in Europe, at this moment, he's at the peak. He's coming up to 29 years of age. So it is one of those things where you'll have to make the numbers add up. Is he going to be worth it? I would say yes. You look at the goal return season on season. Where are we going to pick someone? That's what I'm saying. You could get Erling Haaland. Would he still do the same thing in the Premier League? I would think so, but it's again taking a chance. You've got a tried and trusted guy here. So I think he's coming to that point where I think they've got to get their heads together. In 2 years, don't forget, he's going to be 31 then. And, you know, goodness knows, hopefully there's not an injury along the way. There could be a lot happened. And if he wants to go on a free, the way a lot of these players do, we will know that as the season goes on. Because once they start getting there, you can see, like with Pogba and that, they say, oh yeah, I'd like to stay. No, it's not. It's the player paying lip service to it. They're just looking to get to the end of the contract and go for nothing. Liverpool have not got the kind of money to be able to do that. Mm. I think you're looking at the maths of it all. You might as well give Mo Salah that than what you're going to have to pay, that premium for a top quality striker.
Yeah,
you've got one there on your doorstep, so why not give him what he's wanting?
The other thing, of course, is he never seems to get injured. And, like, he looks to be in unbelievable shape. He's quite happy to take off his top and let everybody know from time to time as well. He looks to be in unbelievable shape, never seems to get injured. And we are, I mean, let alone your playing days, even go back to when you were, you know, in management not so long ago, we are seeing players more and more in their 30s staying in great nick. Like, 30 isn't the end of the road at all for so many players these days.
No, you're quite right, John. There's been a massive window change going back to sort of the Wenger days when it all started. Even Gerard Houllier, we had a change that people were more looking after themselves, keeping themselves fit, working even more in the gym. Because these are young men and they are fit and healthy, but not ripped like you're seeing some of these lads. Like, you marvel at sort of physiques on these lads when they do take him. Mo Salah looks absolutely, and you're quite right. There's not, you look at the numbers that he's, and the only way he's, most of the time that he misses games is because of a little bit of it. He plays most games. He would want to play most games. So he is a phenomenon.
So we're heading into the international break. Chelsea, 16 points. Liverpool, 15 points. And the two Manchester clubs on 14 points. So it's all delicately balanced. And it's been a brilliant start of the season, I would think. Where are Liverpool in this mix for you? One of the question marks hanging over them a little bit is strength and depth of the squad. How do you see the next couple of months playing out at Anfield?
Strength and depth of the squad. I was marvelling at our squad when it came up yesterday, Joe. I was looking. I always have a look at the bench to see, because what you can do it when you want to change it. And our squad is a lot better. It's not maybe as big as Chelsea's or maybe Manchester City's, but it is good. And I think we will be there and City will be there. We are the best two teams. What you seen yesterday was a game of high intensity. Mm. And if Manchester United and Chelsea got that, what you seen Man City doing to Chelsea last week was incredible. And Liverpool, we are, and we've shown this season with our players all back, and the players up front who were scoring, and I think I've said on your programme before, our problem last year was the scoring of goals, not the defending that was happening with it. And the lads are showing this season with the amount of goals that we scored that we're back.
Klopp seems to be back as well. Last year, especially in the pandemic at times, and he was thoroughly fed up with the fixture schedules and seemed to have an argument on BT Sport most Saturday mornings. He was approaching burnout, it looked like. That would be the worry, whereas he does look re-energised here.
Oh, he does as well. I think it's because he's got those, he's had his eyes done and everything. I think he's a lot calmer. he does look as though he's... And listen, when you're getting the results and things are going well and you see your team playing as well as he did, and I thought he spoke really well about first half wasn't good enough and we were nervous, but the second half was very good, exactly as we want to play. So he does. He's very much like that. But when we were losing those home games last year, he was touchy. And you do. It doesn't matter. It is so intense for these managers. That's why you don't see longevity, as you would see many years ago, that they're going to stay for the likes of Wenger and Ferguson. Mm. So, you know, it isn't going to appreciate it. But even Jürgen's back.
As a former player, are you welcome to pop into the training ground or to have a coffee with Klopp, or how does that all work these days?
Do you know what? It is nice, and I do. I do have good relationships with the club. I don't like to put myself on them as though you're in there all the time, and some people do, and they look at trying to get in there. I don't like doing that. They're very nice to me. I get director's box tickets when I want to go to match. They look after me. Tickets are always there. So I have four season tickets for my sons, which I've had for many, many years. So everything's very good. You know, you've been an ex-player, a captain, an assistant manager, I think they welcome what you've done for the club. As you've seen, the fantastic ovation that Roger Hunt got. Mm. I thought it was, we do things like that right, and we do remember our greats.
You know, it's interesting when we're looking ahead to the end of the season, and you mentioned Chelsea's squad being so good and City are obviously going to be there with or without a striker. Manchester United not featuring as prominently in people's minds, I think, at this stage. More drop points at the weekend. You know, you've Ronaldo walking off, tut-tutting, and Solskjaer is never far away from pressure. Their fixture run over the next while, once they get back from international duty, it's Atalanta twice, they'll have Liverpool, they'll have Man City, they'll have Spurs away and Leicester away, and that brings them up to mid-November. That's sticky. There's no gimmies there. It's just not quite happening. What's your sense of Solskjaer's position at the moment, Phil?
Listen, I feel for Ollie. I really do. And I say to everybody when I see the Man United, when I do get a nice chat with him, I feel for him because he's only ever a few games away from everybody wanting him out the door. And he can go on a great run. Everybody was got a few weeks ago, everybody was saying Manchester United are back and it's great, and they've signed Ronaldo and this is wonderful. And it's how fickle people can actually be. Mm. And he is trying to build towards a club. He's got better defenders, Varane, has come in. Shaw has been exceptional. You know that Harry Maguire and Wan-Bissaka, good defender. I just think it's those players in front for a little bit more creativity. When you've got Fred and McTominay, you know, they don't sort of excite you anywhere near. And I know they have to do their job, but it doesn't matter what Ollie does. It'll always be on results. And I do. His decision over Ronaldo not to play him, I felt for him a little bit, because at some point you've got to try and rest. A 36-year-old, I had a big debate on the radio. He's 36, but he's fit, and he said he should be playing every week. But Ollie has to be that one who calls it. And he will have known, if we don't win the game, the criticism is going to come my way. So they had to try and win it. It didn't come. One thing I wouldn't have done was probably rested Pogba, Sancho, and because you're resting two creative players, and obviously Ronaldo can do anything. Mm. And I think it was made because you look at the assists that Pogba's had this year, and to take him out and your goal scorer out, I just think was a big risk.
Yeah, backfired, that's for sure. Well, interesting month coming up for him. Phil, great to have you on. Thanks, Emil.
Joe, lovely to speak again, pal. Take care.
Cheers. Phil Thompson with us there.
The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
Here's the idea for the next 10 pods. We can do Paddy's little holiday review. Yeah. 4 minutes of a review.
Like Catherine Thomas here, no frontiers.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The Football Show on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch every single live Premier League game on Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sports.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
And you're welcome along to the Football Show. Later on, we're going to talk to Brian Kerr. Very happy to say, though, Pat Nevin is with us. It is a Monday evening. Good evening, Pat Nevin. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing, Joe? I can hear you loud and clear.
Excellent, excellent. We have much to talk about. So the league table, as we head towards another international break, has Chelsea top of the heap, 16 points. We have Liverpool on 15. We have Man City and Manchester United on 14. By the way, Everton and Brighton also on 14, so very good starts there. I do remember on the 3rd of January 2019, I went back just to check the date, at the Etihad, it was a game where Aguero and Sané scored for City and Firmino scored for Liverpool. I do remember then thinking, this is pretty much the best game in world football at the moment, pretty close to it, and I'd say it's maintained its status with a few exceptions here or there. Obviously, Liverpool had a bad year last year, but this was great stuff yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, Liverpool City, when they play at their best, they are phenomenal. And they are two of the best teams we've seen in English football for, well, football, full stop, really. Because the quality of players, they are world-class players. They're also both playing exceptionally interesting and exciting types of football. Now and again, I will admit, and I think you will admit as well, most fans would admit, the games haven't been brilliant because it's been a chess match and they've kind of cancelled each other out. But the vast majority of teams is either A, a cracker, or B, you understand why it's not, and it's intriguing anyway. But the quality of players on show, and you know, it's the thing that really jumped out to me that game. Lots of things, obviously, you know, lots of good players. But see if there is a weakness anywhere, it'll be found out. Full stop. It's not maybe, it'll be found out. And James Milner, poor lad, and stuck it right back. You know, if there is a tiny weakness, you are going to get hammered. And it's not, I mean, Milner at his very best could cope. But, you know, it was a tough, tough ask for him. And as we all know, he was lucky to stay in the pitch. He was over covering for a goal, all sorts of things. And that shows you not only the quality of the players, but the game awareness of the players on the pitch and also the awareness of the coaches, they're looking for weaknesses all the time. And if there is a subtle suggestion of one, they're in there and they're using it.
And to be fair, there was nothing all that subtle about Milner in that position, in that kind of a game. How do you suspect that happens? So during the week, Manchester City might well have anticipated Milner playing there, but of course they couldn't be sure until an hour before kickoff. Is it just a brief word, i.e. let's target Milner, and they all understand instinctively how to do it? How do you think that happens in a game of this level?
No, I know how it happens. I've been here before. You almost just look at each other, give each other a glance on the pitch and just kind of look over, right, we're going there. And you just know if one guy's beating some guy constantly, like, just feed him. And the two things, feed him and leave him. Don't feed him and help him. Feed him and leave him. So if you do that and you isolate, then it's party time. It's kind of, it almost doesn't need to be said. Having said that, I was watching, it was the first game of the season, it was Man City against Norwich, and I was at that game. And the game hadn't started any more than 20 seconds, and Pep was out shouting and screaming at Jesus, saying, I'm not taking his words out of his mouth, because I couldn't hear the words, but they're along the lines of, the left back, can he play, as we would say in Scotland? And just kept on going. And it was a wee bit of a shame, because I mean, I'd noticed after 2 or 3 minutes, because his positional sense was all wrong. So if you see it, there's a coach telling you, there's all the players looking in each other's eyes and catching glimpses. But also, if you're 1-1 against the guy and you know you've got him, well, you've got him. You know, and it was that obvious. So, you know, but the fact that they were able to manipulate positions, and what should have happened a little bit more is, you know, Milner starts getting dragged all over the place, because is he going to go with Grealish this time because he goes wide? Or has he got Foden? He's getting dragged all over the place now. So you need somebody just basically sitting in front of him. But of course, that's not what Liverpool do, is it? They don't do that. They don't get their sort of wide attacking players to go and cover in all the time. So that's why that was a serious problem at various points in the game. So it's kind of clever, but in that level, I'd be dead disappointed if he didn't spot it really quickly.
Klopp gave a very interesting explanation afterwards to Sky Sports about why it was such a game of two halves, because the line was out there, I think, in the first half. Liverpool lack energy. They lack energy. And suddenly they have all this energy in the second half. So clearly it's not a case of energy. And as he describes here, there was a hesitancy, maybe is the best way of putting it, about their play and about their pressing of Man City. Have a listen.
I think we could see you obviously weren't right in the first half. Was it a combination of things? Was it a lacking in energy, or was it...
So first of all, is what you have to say. You play Man City, and Man City with the ball is a proper team. So, but there are obviously, how we saw in the second half, ways to defend it. What you have to do, you have to close down the decisive spaces. For that, you have to step out in specific moments. So you need. So what does City want to do? They want to play through the center. First idea. But if center's closed, they go. They leave the two wingers high and wide, pass the ball there. If it's a big switch or just a pass, one-on-one situations, go in the box, whatever, these kind of things. We never close. I'm not sure I saw a lot of games where City could pass the balls that easy through the half spaces. So between our winger and eight, it was constantly poof. So what's the reason for that? We went the last line to passive. We called the midfield line back. So neither Hendo nor Curtis could really step out when needed, when necessary. So we were just passive. They passed the ball through us. They turned, and from there we go. They had chances, clear, but they didn't score from that. But what it gives you is a really bad feeling. This bad feeling leads to not playing football, what we didn't do as well. So then we had these long balls which make absolutely no sense. One or two of them maybe made sense. All the rest, well, not really. I didn't see the reason for it. And obviously all these things we changed in the second half. Immediately you could see we set up, we were higher, we were more aggressive in this situation because we felt closer, we felt more compact. So they couldn't play anymore like they wanted. So we were now in the game, we scored wonderful goals with the ball. The message for the football was play the extra pass. We didn't do that in the first half at all. I'm really happy. But the second half, I'm really happy. It's a strong opponent. Do we want to win a game like this? Yes. But we have to admit today, because the game has two halves, the point is completely fine.
Really interesting. There's so much in that. I mean, he is there pretty much putting the blame on the last line. And I presume he is talking about his defence being too passive and calling the midfielders back.
Yes. But it's difficult to do. Really difficult to do against good players, and they were under a lot of pressure, particularly on, you know, their right back area. And what tends to happen there is a psychological thing, is you think, right, okay. I mean, the words I said to you beforehand, that they don't get their wide player to go back and support. They just don't do that as anywhere near as much as a lot of teams would do, because Klopp doesn't want that. But it would be the natural thing for most players to do. So if you're getting pushed a little bit back, or you've got a problem with your right fullback, trust me, your centre backs aren't going to stand in front of them. Yeah. They're not going to go 10 yards higher. You've got to stay level with them. Because if they don't, they're going to leave them even more isolated, and you don't want that as well. It's funny, though, because there's a psychology to it as well. You know the psychology of, you know, the cop as well. That's a big psychology. You know, you're kicking into that area. That makes a big difference as well. There's a psychology of how you start a game. You know, if you don't start it particularly well. There used to be an old thing. You used to see it years ago. Where, you remember the Wimbledons and all that, used to get the ball and just hump it into the corner and then press. They weren't looking to win the ball, just almost like a rugby kick to touch, right? But quite often, a lot of teams would do that at a very good level as well, because the psychology is they're starting the game in their own half, and that's a psychological downer. Mm. If you can press them there, you actually might win the first 15 minutes in that first 10 seconds. And that was the thinking. Now, oversimplistic, but if you just push that a little bit further on and say, right, okay, if they are pushed back for 10 or 15 minutes, that becomes where you are. You need a break. That's why people love a big tackle or something like that. But you need something to break what is the norm. And for them, it turned out it had to be half-time. That's what it took. And a couple of words for the manager. And he obviously said the right things. What was intriguing is it really was versions of 4-3-3 against each other. And that was intriguing, because then it becomes just battles of individuals against individuals, and then it's who the best player is on the day, or who's the fittest, or who's up for it on the day.
We didn't get to talk last week, but I did want to ask you, Man City's approach against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge was to press them within an inch of their lives and to keep doing it, and they had great success. And so it's very striking, 7 days on, they don't try and press Liverpool in the same way. Tactically, why did Pep, or why did Man City decide not to do that to Liverpool and did do it at Stamford Bridge, do you think?
It's kind of hard to say. Sometimes the players, you know, we say press them. I kind of didn't see it as much. I was at the game, like, and it felt more like, no, we'll just keep the ball. We'll just keep it. And it's back to the, again, away back to the Barcelona way of, we'll give it away a couple of times and we'll try that quick 4 second, 10 second press, right? Mm. And if we don't get it back, then we'll just filter back a little bit and we'll try and win it again. Thing is, they kept on getting it back in that little press. And I think that was because of who they were playing with against. Chelsea on the day, Kante wasn't fit to play, shouldn't have been playing the pitch. And a lot of the other players just looked leggy. Alonso looked leggy. They were against too many players who were miles away from it. And also a team that were trying a new system which they hadn't quite figured out. Chelsea were playing this 3-5-2 or 5-3-2, which they hadn't quite figured out yet. And it wasn't working for them. I would suggest it still isn't quite working for them. Not to say that it won't eventually. So that was that. But you play against Liverpool, they're playing their normal shape, they're playing their normal system, they're playing most of their best players, so they know what they're doing. It's a wee bit harder to do it to that level against certain teams. It's not just the club, it's how they are at that moment, as all the foreign managers say.
So at various points, it's been Foden, it's been Sterling, it's been Ferran Torres earlier in the season, it was Grealish. I appreciate Pep Guardiola sees football in near genius level, if not full-on genius level. And yet a part of me is just watching this team, and not least in the first half when they were so dominant, and just thinking, a Kane, a Lewandowski, he was talking recently about looking for a new challenge. Griezmann's moved recently. Take your pick. Any of them in there would just make City such a better team. Any striker, like even I'm starting to think Jesus in there, just as a striker. Like, they don't have Gundogan, who's going to score 13 goals again this season. There is a frailty there, I would put it to you. Or am I missing something? I mean, I presume Pep is also watching this performance thinking, yeah, God, we really should have got Kane.
Yes, he knows that. They tried to get Kane. There was a reason for it. It's the reasons that you're talking about. And they absolutely desperately wanted to get him, but they couldn't get him. So you can talk around it as much as we like. And the fact that he now needs to find another way, he will try and find another way. And we know he's done it before. He's played with three wee guys up front and it worked an absolute treat. It's absolutely fine. He can do it. It's just that much harder. You tend to find a lot of their goals are absolute crackers, you know. Mm. You know, absolute brilliant goals, because they have to be. They're not getting that striker getting the northern tap-ins quite the same way. You know, the scruffy ones are the classic centre-forward goals, because they haven't got a classic centre-forward. They're not top just now. You know, they are a point behind. there's a brilliant fight on between them and Liverpool and possibly Chelsea as well, and one or two others, you never know. I honestly still feel the same. Had they had Harry Kane, I don't think there would be a fight. I think they would be so far ahead if he'd have stayed fit and fitted in well with that system. He'd have had so many chances. It'd been I honestly do think it's a walk in the park for them. So thank goodness for the rest of us. It didn't happen. I'm delighted with it.
It's almost made like a fair fight out of the league, in so much as it can be a fair fight with all the money at play. But I do, like, you do kind of think in hindsight, Guardiola is now on the record of saying he's going to leave the summer after next. So 2023, two seasons left with Guardiola. I mean, if it took an extra 30, 40 million to get Harry Kane, I appreciate not very good value. Why not just do it? You guarantee yourself the league this season and quite possibly next season, and you have a serious crack at the Champions League, far more so than you currently have. It just has to go down as a massive mistake. I don't get what the 30, 40, 50 million means to that club.
The first thing is, maybe their final offer was 30, 40 more than the original one anyway, which they wanted to do. Mm. So it's not 30, 40, maybe it's 60, 70, 80 million more than they thought a player of that age was worth, who was actually getting injured a little bit, to get them that one over the line for that one trophy that they wanted. And it is that. We're talking about the league, but it's not that. It's not the league. It's winning the Champions League. And they think they could have done that with Harry Kane, and that's why they were trying to get him. But, you know, it's a long way down the road. You talk about Pep. He said 2 years, but he also come back a wee bit from that. He stood down a wee bit from that, and it's not written. It cannot be changed. I mean, he's perfectly capable and able to change his mind. If he managed to get, you know, Haaland in, you know, next year or the year after, do you think he'd walk away when he had the perfect opportunity with the perfect player then?
Mm.
Probably not. He'd give it one more hit. So, you know, I think a lot of the time strategically as a club, you have to think, okay, we could spend 130 million on a player now. Hey, wait a minute. We might get a better player, younger, for roughly that price in a year's time. Is that worth waiting for? Yeah, probably.
Yeah. This game was lit up by the goals, ultimately. The Mo Salah one, just a joy to watch. It's outrageous, isn't it?
It's interesting because, typical me, I watched it back in slow motion a few times, right? Just to see exactly what he's doing, because it goes so quick and you're so involved in the kind of feints and dummies, but kind of need to slow it down and then see how he gets after what each player and who puts himself in that difficult position. And I was chatting to this the other night about somebody, and somebody was asking about my favourite players, and I was saying one of my favourite feelings has always been that, you know, when you've beaten the first player before you get to him, and you're already considering where to position the second player. And us mere mortals did it sometimes during our career, and then you watch your Hazards and your Salahs, and they're like, I get a feeling they were looking three players ahead. it was absolutely astonishing. There was one tackle where he dummied one way and complete, just looking foolish. Top world class defenders looking completely foolish. And then the finish itself, without anything else, the finish is extraordinary. You know, on his swinger, you know, he plays that from that angle with that precision is absolutely extraordinary. But really, how many players in the world in the last 10 years can do that? Honestly, there's, you know, even 20 years, there's very, very few. You're talking Messi, you're talking maybe Hazard at a moment, you're talking himself, to beat that many players. And I'm moaning on about it's not exactly a dying art, but it's a rarity now, because people tend to pass through you and break lines by passing. See, when you see something like that, it rather does gladden the heart and makes you wonder, why don't others try it? You never know, because you've got to learn how to do those sort of things. But I think a lot of players who maybe are capable of doing that sort of dribbling, they maybe just don't do it anymore because, you know, they play the percentages. And, you know, hurrah to, you know, Mo Salah, to Grealish and all the rest of them, because when they do it, we talk about it and we think about it. And then even somebody that was my job partly, even me, I'll get the joy of actually re-watching it and slowing it down and figuring out what was the best little shimmy and dummy. I'm talking to you just now, my shoulders are moving as I'm thinking about it. It was joyous, and it was You know, they're all very good goals, but I mean, that was just miraculously good.
No, it was. He's picking a very nice time as he's negotiating his new contract to score 9 and 9 and assist the other. So it's working on all fronts for him. Before the clock comes against us, Manchester United and Everton drew 1-1. This is starting to feel like crunch time for Solskjaer, actually, at the moment. And the moderates, I think, are beginning to turn and to come to the realisation that really, to get to the next level, this could be the problem. The next couple of games, they have Atalanta twice in the Champions League. They will have Liverpool. They will have Man City. They'll have Spurs away and Leicester away. Who knows what form they're in over the next couple of weeks. But Spurs away and Leicester away. The point is, there is no gimme there. And that takes them through until the next international window in November. So this feels like it. Ronaldo walking off in the way that he did, he knows that puts pressure on Solskjaer, doesn't he?
Yes, but I wonder if he knows he's doing that, or Ronaldo being Ronaldo, it's just about himself. Everything's just about me, how I feel. Doesn't care about what anyone else is thinking. Now, to be fair, he's had a good impact. He's a really good impact. And I think that word impact is the important thing about him. You know, it's why people say, why did you not start him? You know, well, yeah, you don't start him because you want him to be fresh. Or why did you start him? Because he doesn't have as much of an impact. And he's either his stuff, whatever way he does it. Now, if
I know, well, I mean, fresh for Portuguese duty. I mean, that was the kind of crazy thing.
Say that again, so I missed that line.
No, the freshness point. I mean, if they had a huge game next week, you'd say fine. But I mean, Portugal are saying, geez, thanks very much.
Yes, but you need to, again, it's that long-term thing that everyone keeps on talking about when you talk to all the medics at the clubs. Because he's not going for a rest. Portugal will use him harder than probably Manchester United will. Mm. They will use him for every second of it. And he will be walking about like Atlas carrying the team to some degree as well. So they will absolutely squeeze every single ounce that they can out of him. So people do make the mistake of thinking, oh, it's international, but you can have a rest. No, you can't. It's the worst. It's the hardest. And sometimes there's international managers that work you harder than you do at training as well, not knowing your type of body and what you need. So when they take that into consideration, he's not going to break. He's got games coming up.
No, that's true. He is approaching a point, though, Solskjaer, where if you're winning and things are going well, what he's doing with the team looks like a kind of healthy rotation, and you know it's perfect, and you're giving everybody adequate rest. It's starting to increasingly feel like a man looking for his best team. So I mean, again, at the weekend it was McTominay, Fred, it was Greenwood, Fernandez, Martial, Cavani up front. Like, none of those are bad players, but you do wonder if he has a best team in mind, and that best team probably haven't played together for 2 or 3 games in a row, and he can't really afford much more of this. I think this is getting serious for him now.
It could be, but rather hilariously, that argument of the best team, I think you summed it up brilliantly there. So, does Thomas Tuchel know his best team? Because he changes it all the time.
I think he does. I think he does, though.
He made 5 changes there at the weekend, then. He's bringing in Ruben Loftus-Cheek, and he's bringing in Barkley, who had never touched for ages. You could say the same about Pep sometimes. You're not too sure that they're winning.
Neither of whom, Loftus-Cheek or Barkley, and they are interesting cases who we must talk about at some stage, are in his best team. We know Tuchel's best team, bar 1 or maybe 2 changes he might make depending on opposition. Guardiola's tougher to guess, but I think we'd have a decent crack depending on the mood he's in, admittedly. We know Liverpool's best team, 1 or 2. Manchester United... And what's their style of play? What are they about? Like, this is all fine when you're winning the majority of your matches, but when you're in a bit of a crisis, it just starts to look a bit hapless.
It does. You're absolutely right. Because you know what the USP is of all those teams, don't you? The unique selling point of Chelsea is a very specific thing. It was a 3-4-2-1 last season, and it done well for them. And you know what Liverpool's are. We've watched it long enough, and it's not actually changed. A massive is tweaked here and there, but it's always been the same. City, you know what it is. But you're right. Man United, I'm not sure you are. It's not even the old-fashioned attack, 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 attack. It's completely different now. And you are not sure exactly what it is all the time. But that's actually the norm. That is the norm with most teams. Because a lot of teams, they have to adapt all the time. Whereas the first 3 we mentioned there, they have, I actually do feel they have a very specific thing, which is them, and they stand out. And you could almost ask them to play in any colour strips and you still know which team that was because of how they play. But there's actually not that many that are absolutely like that. And Manchester United, I agree with you, I don't think they absolutely do know. But do you know what? See if there was 10 guys, 11 guys that were playing brilliantly every single week, I think you'd find out quick enough. Problem is, it kind of not happened, has it? And even Bruno and people, that they're absolutely amazing, they have great times, and then they have this really fallow period. You can't leave them in. So how do you know your best team? You can't keep on playing him if he's not playing well enough. So, but there is a kind of look about this. They're only 2 points off the lead. You know, they're still up there. I mean, they're leveling points with Manchester City. It isn't a disaster. But hey, it could be after this run of games, because you're absolutely right. It's a monster run of games. And I would argue, they could argue that United, to some degree, have had the maybe the cushiest of all the top teams in this kind of first part of the season. So maybe it is false. We'll find out if it's false after these next few games. When you play against the very best ones, you will find. I still don't think they're a team that are going to get hammered. They don't look like that. They just look like a team that are not going to be challenging to win the league, but they probably still get top four.
Yeah. You met Chelsea there. Barkley, 27 years old now, Ross Barkley. I still think he was 22. It's just been that kind of a career. And then Ruben Loftus-Cheek as well had an impact. So, I mean, you just forget how strong this Chelsea squad are. You know, like, you forget Ross Barkley's hanging around. You sort of forget Ruben Loftus-Cheek a little bit. And even Timo Werner scored 2 goals, 1 disallowed. So everything's kind of rosy there. They're top of the table.
It looks outwardly rosy. And I'll be honest with you, it's not as rosy as it looks. You're right about the squad. I went down to a game. They played at Bournemouth pre-season, and they played what was their third team. And a lot of them could have got into most teams in the Premier League. It was absolutely ridiculous, the strength and depth they had. What he's actually done is he's a very pragmatic guy, Tuchel, because he wanted Ridley Loftus-Cheek at the start of the season. I've no doubt about that. Ross Barkley, had he been sold, he'd been sold, and no one would have batted an eyelid, and it would have probably suited Tuchel as well. But they weren't. They're still there. He doesn't go in a huff for them. He doesn't do what other managers used to do and tell me run about with the reserves of the under-18s. He thinks, okay, how can I manipulate this situation that I might get something out of you? And I'm massively impressed with them. So they're happy with that. But it's not perfect. If you look closely at Lukaku, the last 2 or 3 games, it's back to the Lukaku that we used to talk about a year ago.
And
it's, you know, the weight may not have changed, but the body shape looks back to that body shape again. He's had to go and play in a 2. It doesn't seem to suit him. He doesn't seem to like it as much. But it's almost imperceptible. But when you see him move, he's not moving the same way as he was earlier in the season. And it's one of those classic ones where it's going to be a tough one to do it, but he's going to have to rest him at some point. He really is going to have to rest Lukaku, because Everton's kind of going through that sort of area. And he found himself last week where he hadn't rested Jorginho, he hadn't rested Kante, he hadn't rested Kovacic. And even the week before that, Mason Mount had gone. All these players with all that energy all suffered. When you don't rest them, they suffer. And at the moment, he managed to get a wee bit of rest for those other midfielders. But the real question mark, and it's hardly been asked yet, but it is Lukaku. And if we can give him a wee rest and he comes back then flying the way as he was at the start of the season, they're a massive danger. But there's little cracks. There's definitely little cracks there, definitely. I don't think all is rosy. I'd say that would be unfair. Because at 1-1, I was at the game against Southampton. At 1-1, 11 against 11, Southampton were the better team. They were the better team at Stamford Bridge, and they looked the more likely to score. Sending off a couple of substitutions, and Chelsea end up 3-1. But I wasn't fooled with it at all. That was a very, very close thing. And by the way, Southampton, they're not bad. They're all right. I keep on looking down this league, and everybody I look at, Leeds United, I like them. Yeah. They're a good team. They're a really good team. They're a hell of a lot of good teams.
Nobody's bad. It's outrageous. We've never had it better. It's so good.
I actually think it could be, in strength and depth, the best I've seen in the Premier League, which is tough news for Norwich. Because if there's anyone who's going to struggle, it's going to be them.
Listen, we're out of time. It has been an amazingly interesting start to the Premier League season. International break now, so we'll chat to you down the line, I'm sure. Pat Nevin, great to have you on. Thanks so much.
Speak to you soon, then.
Cheers. Care, Pat Nevin with us there. Football on Off the Ball is brought to you by Sky. All the football you love in one place across Sky Sports, BT Sports and Premier Sports.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch every single live Premier League game on Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sports.